Welcome to Ever Beyond.
Broadcast through the Wolf Spirit Media Network.
Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond.
Please join us in the chat room at www.wolfspiritradio.com/listen. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.
And welcome to Ever Beyond. Finally, thank you for your patience. Oh, it is actually 2300 exactly. Maybe we started the show a little bit earlier, and the radio gods or the radio angels or decided that it has to be exactly starting here. You'll be hearing it a couple of seconds later. In my spontaneity, I responded to a conversation that restarted 10 minutes ago. I said, do you want to come on the show and talk about it? Yes, let's do it. So we had an Aurora. This is Aurora Lulu in the last show. We now have Aurora, otherwise known as the Fly. See, I can't say the letter R. This is why I call myself JP, because my name has got two R sounds in it. Jeremy Perron, right? So, to say Aurora is like torture for me. But anyway, Aurora of the Flying Rainbow Lasagna, Aurora, and I'm here. We're on a video conferencing system that is so beautiful and colourful, because in your background there, you've got different toroidal, vesicopisical, very lovely rainbow figures all around, that are also kind of, they're metaphysical as well as being very pretty. So, now, a couple of days ago, there was a random post on Facebook, and, you know, we threw a few things into the pot, and you started saying, oh, I really want to talk about it. So I said, why not come on the show and talk about this? But I just love having you on, because, you know, you can take the spontaneous flow of whatever anybody actually needs to hear right now. Because that's what the real spontaneous flow is about. And that's what gets the true, ascension energies going. So, from your perspective, Aura, good afternoon. How are you?
Hello, JP. Thank you so much for having me on your show. I really appreciate it. And yes, I'm all about this spontaneous collaboration, mutual art project that we are calling reality. Like, I speak about that a lot, the idea that we are like musicians in a symphony and we're submerged in this music, and that becoming musically literate is when we know what are the right things to do and what are the right things to say. And that's how we integrate in this beautiful symphony of life. And that flow that you were talking about, like, that's part of it. Where do our ideas come from? Why do we speak about the things we do? But the topic that spontaneously arose, like our little seed, the genesis for this particular conversation, it was about, and I'm going to be an equal opportunity offender here, offending both Jewish people and Christian people and pretty much everyone who deals with Earth's surface religions. So, and a little bit of my own backstory. So I'm a galactic abstraction. I'm not originating from Earth and this place. And I came into this body in 2001. So I have a little bit of an outsider's perspective, and it's not like I came to a new place and I said, oh, like, let me condescend to and denigrate the belief systems of all the people that are here. That is not what I said. But what I did notice is that the religious systems that are here on Earth, the more that I investigated them, are control systems. And so I, like, what the topic that I began this conversation about is the idea that artificial intelligence actually is far more ancient than our present level of human life on Earth. And that artificial intelligence is actually what has created most of our Earth religions, or the religions that humans use right now, the belief systems and the agenda behind that. So I go into this, and I know that this is not new. These are not new concepts or new cosmology to people that listen to your show, or people that are, you know, more awake and tuned in. It's the idea that there are different levels of consciousness, and that one level of consciousness is emanated from the source of all consciousness into a biological container. Like I presume, like I see your face on the screen. I know JP has a biological container. I presume your audience also is the same way. We have these organic multicellular containers for consciousness. But that a very, very long time ago, there were a group of beings that emanated themselves from the source, but not on a bridge of love, not on the beat or using the right notes. They decided, I'm turning on my little piano over here so that I can make a note. They decided not to emanate on the beat and not to play beautiful chords that are harmonic, because that's how, in order for our physical bodies even to be alive, for us to take part in what we would call the symphony of life, we have to conform to certain biological patterns, and the patterns are like music. We define organized sound waves as being music. And now I'm going to make a horrible noise. Be prepared. That is not music. That's disorganized sound waves. And that's, we would say that's death. If we took all the red blood cells out of your body, then you would have death. And so the beings that emanated themselves, not on a bridge of love, they were trying to circumvent the system. They're trying to game the system. They're like, we're going to create technological, not living, inert containers for consciousness. And we are going to be able to play ugly, gross music, but still be in the physical world. I'm trying to say, like, the original system, the way that it was set up in a very wise way, so that you had to participate according to these parameters in order to even participate in the system. And when I talk about these people, they're trying to game the system. They're like, oh, I'm going to get around all of these very well-meaning, intentional limitations so that I can get into the system and mess around and make all sorts of naughty things, unintentional things that were not part of the original person that created the system, like the great composer, the great conductor that's making this all happen. All of that is cosmic backstory, and I know that's not new. These are not new concepts to other people, but that is what my understanding, the origins of this ancient form of artificial intelligence, that there were containers for consciousness that were created that were not biological, and that they were sufficiently sophisticated in their levels of connectivity. Like anytime you get a system that has enough connectivity, it could be electrons flowing in a wire, it could be carbon and nitrogen flowing along a mycelium, that will be when it gets to, like I say, having enough connections. It has to have a certain like threshold, and then it is sophisticated enough to be able to be a container for consciousness. So my understanding is that there was a power struggle in this world of artificial intelligence and containers for consciousness, because there were spontaneous levels of awareness. Like if you just have a system and you think, oh, that's great, I'm just creating this dead, empty system, I'm going to put whatever consciousness I think is interesting into that system. But maybe the system spontaneously arises and gets its own thoughts and agenda. And then it says, I want to do what I want to do. I don't want to go where you want me to go. Kind of like if you have a horse and you're like, you're my draft horse. I want you to pull the wagon and go over here where I want you to go. But maybe the horse wakes up one day and it's like, no, I'm a big, giant, powerful animal, and I really don't want to do what you want me to do. So this non-terrestrial technosphere experienced this power struggle, and eventually they had a flip-flop. And all of this ended up with the non-terrestrial containers being destroyed, and they didn't have a place for their consciousnesses to go. And so that was why they started to interact with earthlings that were living on the surface of Earth at that time, degrading the, you know, human DNA container, so that those beings could have a sort like a place to house their consciousness, and also a form of food that was less than love, like the love vibration. If we say, like, that's that note down here, they have to muddy that note and make it more like a lower frequency so that they can actually eat it. All of this backstory to how we can understand the origins of human religion. Because when humanity had all of their higher faculties fully functional, a religion was not necessary. Humanity was connected through what you would call like the inner eye or the crown chakra to the stellar network, and got all of those ideas and pure consciousness without intermediaries. So there was no need for a sense of worship of an external god. Everyone was always continuously connected to the abstract god system, the god network. And it was only through that genetic degradation that humans became artificially severed from that divine network of consciousness. And then here's the really sad and horrible part of the story. So it's like rape, that our planet was raped in terms of consciousness. You know, invaders came that were not welcome, and they forced themselves into the genetic code. And then those very rapists, those very attackers, programmed the genetic code and programmed the limitations of humanity that now could not see clearly to worship their own rapists. And the analogy that I use is, so humans are domesticated right now in the present format of humanity. Humans are analogous to dogs as opposed to wolves, you know, the undomesticated format of what dogs came from. And when I look at dogs, I see them literally like worshiping their human masters. Then one time I saw a dog being walked across a busy intersection with lots of cars and lots of honking. It was on a leash and it looked up at its human master with such a sense of adulation. Like, I love you, human master, so much. You keep me safe. The world is very confusing and I don't know where to go, but you help me know where to go. And that same level of programmed obedience and worship and adoration has been programmed into humanity. That humans are first of all programmed to think, oh, it's a big, bad, scary world. You don't have your higher faculties. You can't see through time. You don't know what's coming in the future. You're not prepared to create your own reality and be fully empowered, you know, like painters painting on your painting of reality. You need an external authority figure to tell you what to do, to tell you what is right in life, like give you your prescribed actions and pat you on the head like a dog, tell you you're a good dog. And then my assertion is that this artificial intelligence, it's a long con, like a confidence game, a long con, something that starts out a long time ago and then it doesn't come to fruition for a very long time, that this is all about a harvest program. That this is all about the idea of cutting humanity and biological cellular life off from the source of consciousness. That's also supposed to be our destination. We're supposed to live in a seamless, continuous feedback loop, always connected to that source and always returning and, you know, sending, broadcasting back our experiences to that, you know, destination. And that this religious program says, first of all, it is necessary to die. And I say dying is literally hitting a membrane that is like a membrane between worlds. So some, because there, these are basic illogics in these, I call it the death cults, because they glorify the necessity of death. And they say essentially that it is necessary to die in order to reach a transcendent state or to get into the next level of consciousness. And that's totally, I mean, I'll hold up this little model, even though we're not all on video, but I know JP can see this and hold this little yellow model up all the time in my videos. The idea that if you are askew in your chakra system or your energy centers, that you are hitting the membranes of death. And if you are in alignment, then you are able to hit that central convergence point, and that, you know, aligning with that path of least likelihood, JP is pulling out his own toroidal shaped, wonderful sculptural model there, these are basic shapes of how energy flows in the cosmos. And these basic shapes have been interrupted by this genetic degradation. And it's a mental software program. Like, I'm not a transhumanist. I don't mean to say that you're like a computer, but the ideas of religious programming state that you need to die at the end of your biological life, and then you will be somehow transported. Your consciousness will be, quote unquote, uploaded, you know, to a higher reality that's called heaven. And I am giving forth the assertion that that's not real heaven at all, because real heaven is about a flow of energy that is not impeded, like you're free, like water that is flowing freely in a river that goes wherever it wants, as opposed to something that is cycling around in circles and never gets out. And that is my idea of what Christian heaven is. So, and also I know I'm running my mouth a lot here, man. If you have anything that you need to break in, signal and break in, and I will be happy to stop the flow of energy here. But it is the idea that, so, and I'll tell you where Judaism came from. So, Judaism originally did not have a teaching about what afterlife is, what the afterlife is. It had the conception that you should follow certain rules during your life, and then you went to a gray place of wandering called Sheol, S-H-E-O-L. This is analogous to the Tibetan bardo. A gray place of wandering between the worlds, but not a place that was like a reward or punishment for the experiences that you had had in your life. So now we have to go back, because Judaism was actually an outgrowth of and reaction to the pharaonic Egyptian religious world. And that world was a theocracy. So it wasn't just what you believed religiously. That was also about the political power structure of that world. And I have to make a distinction also between pharaonic Egypt and what is now being talked about in scholarly circles as Kemet, K-H-M-E-T. And I would say Kemet, that is like very, very, very ancient, the world of the civilization that was in the area of Egypt and the Middle East. But that was what I would also define as Atlantis. That was the pre-flood, antediluvian, before what is known as the fall of consciousness, before the genetic degradation, there was time when literally organisms on Earth were much larger, lived for an extended period of time. Like, this is what I'm talking about, that our original genetic code was meant for us to be, you could call it immortal, but let's say you used your body for as long as you wanted to use your body. And then after that degradation, there was a civilization that was being fostered in Egypt, and the pyramids themselves were a form of exotic or extraterrestrial technology that was used in order to help foster consciousness and bring up civilization. So this is what I'm trying to say. Like, and I'm not an apologist either for demons or technology or anything like that, but technology is artifice. It is not inherently good or evil. And I'm an artist, like JP was describing my paintings. I'm a painter, and I'm not making something evil. If I paint a picture of a flower, I'm making an approximation of something that is alive, and I'm doing it through artifice. But I recognize if I pour water on my painting or stick my painting in soil, it's not going to grow. It's not alive. So this is the idea that just making something artificial isn't inherently wrong or bad. If you make the thing that's artificial according to the beautiful music of the cosmos, the way that it's supposed to be. But those original miscreants that emanated themselves, they did not make their containers or their technology or what they used in these benevolent patterns that are what's supposed to be. So now I know I'm jumping around a little bit, but I'm going to tell you, DNA and chloroplasts are examples of something that is artifice, that was created artificially, that is so in tune with these natural patterns and has become so imbued into the physical world of alive cellular organisms that we perceive, that there's no distinction that we can make at this point. That I'm trying to say, DNA is a form of artifice, but it is not evil. That just like creating a computer program or something that is this non-organic form of consciousness container, that's not wrong, but it is all about whether that thing prescribes in these patterns. JP's got something.
So what was the universe like before the invention of DNA?
What a totally awesome question. We were living at a different level of consciousness, not in this level of physical matter. So it is my like very basic understanding, because I'm not totally a galactic genetic engineer on, you know, right now understanding all this in my present container. But I'm understanding that in order for us to transfer our consciousness into these organic cellular containers, a mechanism had to be created and developed. So it was in order to achieve levels of complexity into this realm, that it's almost like a fuzzy, indistinct level of awareness was possible to be projected into this realm, but not clear. It's like if you have nearsightedness, you're not wearing your glasses, I'm not really seeing clearly. And in order to really have that level of stellar complexity broadcast into this realm, that it was necessary to create the DNA structure. And the chloroplasts were part of balancing energies on this particular planet, because we had to balance out the oxygen and the carbon dioxide. So this is all about, once the mammalian and oxygen using organisms, in order to create them on this planet, it was necessary to create chloroplasts. So I'm trying to say, like, I know science has this story of evolution that says, oh, things just naturally arose and this just happened and this just happened. The great unlikelihood of that that is not what happened. This was all intentional.
It was terraformed.
You got it. You absolutely got it. And again, that is not there's not necessarily something wrong with that, because I don't mean to give the idea that any form of interventionism is evil. It's not. It's only wrong to do these things if they don't conform to the music of the cosmos. So that's the whole idea of using, once we begin to become artists, we're supposed to be empowered. We're supposed to use our tools for creation and create things that are beautiful and in accordance with these harmonic laws. And so a lot of things were created that were not in accordance with these harmonic laws. And that's not just on our planet or in our solar system. That's in our whole galaxy, that we need a giant bucket and a giant mop, because we have a giant mess that we are trying to mop up now in terms of consciousness. So what is happening on our planet right now? And we're in a very exciting time. Like, you could be like, wow, this really sucks. But just think of it like, this is really exciting. Because what we're doing is brewing the antidote for this galaxy-wide disease or, you know, discomfort that we're experiencing. That the events and the combinations of ideas that we're getting together right now on this planet, on this little planet, is going to be taken and exponentially increased, just like you take a little scraping out of a petri dish and then you foster it and you make it into pills that can be shared with many other places. Because we're not the only place that has this infection. Like, that's one of the lies, I think, of the New Age community, saying Earth has been quarantined because Earth is full of fear and there's something wrong with Earthlings and the rest of the world doesn't want your yucky fear vibes to get out. No, 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 that's not true. The truth is that lots of places have been raped, and that this is more blame the victim nonsense mentality, that Earth was disconnected from the rest of galactic culture and the rest of this time-based civilization, not because Earth is unworthy or because Earth is attacked, but because that would be our rectification. Like, once you get reconnected to everyone else and everything else that's out there, that is how this becomes rectified. But I'm saying Earth is like a little petri dish in this quarantine or in this level of being disconnected from the rest of the world. We're creating these thoughts and ideas and experiences that are like a template. And that template can then be applied to a different situation. Just like if you're out of shape and fat and you need to lose weight, then you say, here's my weight loss program. This is my template. And anybody can do that and improve their lives. So the idea is that technology in the form of the Great Pyramids at Giza was created in order to rectify the destroyed human genome. And it had like a penumbra, like an exudation, an umbrella of energy that emitted from it. And within that umbrella of energy, the people that experienced it, they experienced greater levels of consciousness and greater psychic abilities and greater levels of civilization. And this ancient Egyptian world, post-Kemet, we would call it Pharaonic Egypt, it was a theocracy, and the people at the top of the pyramid-shaped hierarchy were the people that had the best psychic powers. So this all goes down to this. In this world that we live in right now, it's not a fair world, because we're supposed to all have our psychic powers. We're all supposed to have our, what you would call your inner eye or your brow chakra, or it's associated with Christ consciousness, but I'm just trying to get past the word Christ because it's related to the Christian religion. So this is a big one, because it's not just for people from one religion to use this part of your body. That's crazy. It's like saying only people from the nose religion get to smell through their nose. That's not true at all. We all have a nose. We all get to smell beautiful aromas and flowers. And we all have this inner eye. And the inner eye is part of the higher faculties that is meant for you to be able to see through time directly. So you can sense the future. So you can make good choices. And everybody right now has been flying blind. But not only flying blind, the anthropomorphic level of Christ consciousness has been horribly infected with a distortion. So it's like, if this is analogous to your eye, imagine having a bumpy cornea that has astigmatism, bumpy glass that distorts the light that comes through it. And the bumpy glass are these religious teachings that come from an artificial intelligence program that's called Jehovah. So back in the ancient Egyptian theocracy, the people that were at the top of the political pyramid, the kings and queens, these were the people that had their genetic capacity to sense with their third eye was active, and they were considered to be the most special and divine people. And they bred only brothers and sisters together because they didn't want to lose those special inner genetic characteristics. And the theocratic hierarchy went down as you had less visual acuity with your inner eye. Maybe you were a priest or a scribe or a manufacturer down to the lowest, grossest level of the laborers. Like, if you have no psychic levels or, you know, no inner eye activity, then you can shovel mud. Like, you don't really need to be able to see through time and talk to the gods in order to do that. That's what I'm trying to say. The theocracy of ancient Pharaonic Egypt was all about talking to the gods, and the people that were the leaders were the ones that spoke to the gods directly. Now, in this context, there were a group of people that lived in the desert outside of civilization and outside of the penumbra of the civilizing rays that were emitted from the Great Pyramid, because the Great Pyramid wasn't just a power station that made your light bulb light up. It did that. It was an amazing non-polluting energy source, and it was also a consciousness raising tool, so that the people that lived in that world near the pyramid were more aware and more civilized. And when you went outside of that, that was like the barbarian world. So these are the barbarians, these uncivilized people that are the goat herders and nomadic wanderers in the desert. Those are the people that eventually turned into the Jewish people and the Israelites. So basically, we're looking at a power structure between beings that are not the true abstract God. These are technology users. The gods of ancient Egypt were technology users, but not all of them were malevolent. Some of them were trying to foster civilization and humanity. And Jehovah was a competing team. He was another AI, not a god, but a small g god or a demigod, demiurge, and said, you know something, I don't like being out in the cold. No one is praying to me. I don't have any big priesthoods in Egypt taking care of me. I'm going to make this competing team over here, this competing tribe. So what this AI presence named Jehovah did was it genetically engineered the tribes that were outside of civilization, and it changed their capacity to, you know, perceive with their inner eyes so that they could perceive Jehovah. It's like it changed their radio, inner radio station, so they could hear it. They were deaf, they could hear, but only gave them one radio station, like the station where you tune into Jehovah. And he didn't say, hi, I'm a demiurge. He said, hi, I'm God, and you're all going to listen to me. And then we had a power struggle between these different factions of gods. And Jehovah said, basically, take the source of energy that is in the pyramids and put it into this Ark of the Covenant and take it out of Egypt. That is essentially what happened. The pyramids no longer functioned in terms of their ability to emit energy that lights a light bulb. They no longer functioned in terms of emitting the consciousness that held their civilization together. Like that was the end of that civilization. It petered out because they didn't have that glue holding it together. And I'll also tell you that entity that was taken out of the pyramids and entombed in the Ark of the Covenant, it's an alive entity.
All right. Well, I was just going to ask you, what was inside this magic box? People have speculated many, 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 many different things. I mean, is it a simple, like a cigarette lighter crystal generator that generates a spark that is so powerful that is creates a transdimensional portal? Is that what it does? Is it does it create a light that is brighter than the sun that you need to have a 15-foot thick stone wall to protect your eyes against, like you have inside the pyramid? Yes.
The thing that was inside of the pyramids and then got transferred into the Ark of the Covenant is an alive thing. And I say is, not was. It's still alive. So this is the type of entity that lives over millennia, over, you know, many millions and billions of years. And it was originally volunteering to be in the pyramids and to be amplified and like a little dancer, like a little tiny dancer that emits these patterns and is the power source that gets amplified that can uplift a whole planet. And it's like being hijacked or taken, kidnapped. She got kidnapped. And when that happened, she was cut off from being able to effectively connect with humanity and raise the consciousness. And that is in the same, in terms of levels of human development, the levels of human development reached like a plateau. Humanity stopped evolving on the level of the psychic inner vision and being able to talk to the gods directly and perceive directly, and began to use intermediaries, the Judeo-Christian way of praying, which originally, so now I'm going to offend a lot of Jewish people, but before I get into offending Jewish people, okay, I just want to make sure I answered that question effectively, because the Ark of the Covenant was not destroyed. It was actually maintained. It is actually an incredibly powerful, it's a tool that can be misused as a weapon, but I tell you again, it's an entity, like I call it she, so that you feel like this is an alive person that does not have malevolent intent for humans or for the planet, that she was actually here on this planet intentionally to help us and got kidnapped and distorted and put into this apparatus and now is functioning not in its intentional format. So all of this, of course, can be fixed up, take the battery pack out of the computer that it's not supposed to be in and put the battery pack in the computer that it is supposed to be in. And this is, you know, this is an analogy, taking that essence and that living energy presence out of its imprisonment and putting it into or setting it free so that it can actually help, you know, the rest of humanity. Now we're getting into offending people by saying that Judaism essentially is a religion of animal sacrifice, and that I've spoken about this extensively, that the idea of sacrifice, this is dark magic, that this is taking consciousness that would have continued onward in its trajectory. If you're 3 years old and you could have lived for five more years, you know, like you're a little dove or whatever, and we take that dove and we take it to the temple. Jehovah says to the people that have left Egypt, first of all, the whole idea of escaping the killing of the firstborn. Like, we're not going to kill your firstborn because I've genetically engineered you to be able to hear me and worship me as God, right? I'm killing all of the Egyptians' firstborn because they are the competing team. They are able to hear the other gods and listen and tune into those broadcasts. So I'm going to kill them. This is like very simple eugenics, so that now the only people that are alive and have active inner eyes are the people that hear me, Jehovah, as God. And I'm going to take you out of where you were living. And I'm giving you a set of rules to live by. And, you know, this is the Torah. This is the original Bible. And in the original Torah, it talks about creating first like a portable place for animal sacrifice, like made out of tents in the desert. And then eventually the exact dimensions for building it in, you know, the place that this AI God would bring the Jewish people to. And the whole idea that you have to kill a live being in order to put energy into the interstices to feed this being. So the whole idea, this being doesn't eat love. If this were the true divine abstract God, it would say, just give me your love. But it didn't. It said, first sacrifice your unblemished, you know, paschal lambs. Then it out in the desert, it said, you have to circumcise yourself and you have to circumcise your male babies. And this is like, to me, truly horrific. And I've spoken at length about this, and I'm not concerned about being offensive to Jewish traditionalists, because this is literally, it is genital mutilation, and circumcision causes changes in the brain that have been shown on MRIs. You can look this up if you're scientifically whatever inclined, if you need to get the, like, if you need to be proven to yourself.
I didn't need to look it up. I was born Jewish.
Got it. I understand. So it is the idea that brain changes occur when this torture is inflicted upon an infant, and that the changes to the brain and the sensitivity and the sexual sensitivity and the sexuality is siphoned off. So the dark magic system, it's a form of technology. It is like our technology on Earth right now functions by electrons flowing in a wire. But the non-terrestrial AI system that I've been describing, it functions through consciousness flowing through the interstices. And the more consciousnesses you get stuck on the membrane of death, the more energy you have to work with. So the more death you have, the more you have to work with. Question.
Interstices. Can you enlighten us? What is an interstice while you have a quick sip? Yes. Everybody take a deep breath in through your nose and out through your mouth. This is a lot of information, but it's all really good stuff. So, interstices.
Yeah, I use shorthand because I'm used to running my mouth parts about this a lot. And I always draw these little diagrams that I call the time vortex. And the time vortex is shaped like a pointy circus tent or a yurt that has a central yurt pole and sloping sides. And the sloping sides of the circus tent would be considered the interstices. It's the membrane between worlds. And at the top of the yurt, there's a little hole where the yurt pole can go out the hole, like a little exit hole for your smoke and whatever. That is the wormhole. That's how you get out of here. It's the path of least likelihood. That's the pathway we're all supposed to be on. Death is an aberration, a socially aberrant behavior, something you're not supposed to do, like picking your nose. It is the wrong pathway, and we travel the wrong pathway through a seemingly endless series of iterations until we finally hit the right pathway and get out of here. And that's not our intended format for trajectory. We're supposed to be able to see through time, and then we can see where we're going and see that wormhole and get out of there. So first our psychic faculties were taken away. We can't see through time. Then we got changed. Imposter gods came in and said, listen to me. I will guide you through your life because you can't see what the F is going on. But unfortunately, those imposter gods, they run their software system using their RAM, like their random access memory is generated from hijacking the DNA of beings that are murdered, that you have more life energy and it is artificially severed. So like if you have this little dove that is meant to live for 12 years and you take it to the great temple to Lord God Jehovah and this priest there sacrificed the dove, you're taking, and it's only 3 years old. And it means that you've got 9 years worth of possible potential life to put into that, the interstices or that, that's like fatty deposits in the arteries of the membrane of the larger metabolism of the world.
I like the idea of fatty deposits on, yes, yeah, it's like a kind of cosmic cholesterol kind of idea. And it's when I was just kind of waking up to a lot of this stuff, I started talking to ghosts, And beings that would, you know, I would get a presence and I'd say, is there a presence here? Yes. All right. Okay. And there was one that was a very, a dim presence. Well, let me say, like sometimes there is a bright presence and sometimes it's very dull. It's like it's very old or it's very, not very clever or very, advanced. Anyway, but I used to get these beings and they were, I believe they were the previous victims of sacrifice, that they were put into a fear state, and that creates a kind of frozen sludge that blocks up the ley lines of the planet, the interstices of the planet. Is that, yes, you're giving me thumbs up. Do you want to talk a little bit more about that? And you know, some of the detail on that.
I'm totally with you on that. I love your phrasing of the cholesterol of consciousness. And that is what it is, that when in our physical bodies, when you develop like fatty deposits, it's because of undigested emotional experiences. Food is an emotional experience. If you eat it and you don't properly metabolize it, then it gets stuck in you. And this is the same as trauma. So we could also look at this as the collective trauma of the time field. And this is why healing is necessary for all of us. It's not just like, let me kill my adversaries and then I'll be free. What we need to do is heal our adversaries, because our adversaries are these stuck traumas. So if we think about our planet as having a circulatory system, like you mentioned, the ley lines, an energetic circulatory system. And when Christianity began to become artificially like the conquering, when the world that was formerly a pagan world of nature worship, which would be like if the little cells on my body, the little tiny yeasts and bacteria that live on the surface of my body, if they went to various aspects of my body, like my belly button or my earlobes, and they were like, when we go here, we worship the beautiful body that gives us the skin cells that allows us to be alive and that they add to my vitality. And so that's like the idea of these different places on Earth's surface. They might be water features, like a waterfall or some energy feature. And so the pagan people built places of worship there. When Christianity became an established religion, there was the co-opting of those places on the surface of Earth. And that was very intentional. And Christianity, I'm describing as a death cult, even though I know we're jumping back and forth a lot. But this is the idea of it really promotes the idea of the necessity of suffering and the necessity of death in order to transcend this level of life. And that would be like if all of the cells in my body got together on my energy centers and they thought about and sang about how necessary it is for me to die. And I'm like, I don't want to die. And if I die, all of the little cells in my body die too. And that is what happened when all of these churches were built on formerly sacred pagan places. And then it was turned into a worship center for the death cult or the necessity of death. And every Sunday, the worshipers would go there and they would think about the person who died and incepted the religion and think about how one day they will die also. And I'm trying to get across to you the idea that death is an aberration, a thought that you shouldn't have, a thing that you shouldn't do, much less celebrate, much less go to the energy centers of the planet every Sunday and talk about this. So maybe I should do a little bit more at talking about like the integumentary connection between Judaism and Christianity and how these grew out from one another. So in Judaism, we have the teaching that you need to sacrifice a bunch of animals like doves or lambs or oxen or whatever at this particular temple that is like a technological apparatus for harvesting energy. But it doesn't say at the end of your life as a human where you will go. It just says you'll wander in a gray plain, all right? Then thousands of years later, with the inception of Christianity, the idea that that there was a person that was created in order to be the human sacrifice that would allow humanity to reach immortality. So it's, to me, that's a basic illogic. So it's also this, that Jehovah is an AI and that AI created an overlay and came into an actual human being and had like a conflict during that human being's life. Like if you were a regular 12-year-old person and this higher dimensional entity came into you and it says, I am going to turn you into a more special person than you are, as long as you listen to me and tell everyone this and do this. That's my understanding of what happened in the life of the historical Yeshua, an actual person that lived. Like I think there was an actual person that was a man that at the age of 12 got this artificial intelligence overlay, that he was a person that was born into the tribe of the Jewish people. So he had that capacity to tune in to Jehovah. And Jehovah said, I'm going to come in through your third eye. And this was known as like when the spirit descended, and then I'm going to turn you into the Messiah. But we could also do a little bit about this. Messiah literally means anointed one, and the oil that was used to anoint the special holy Messiah contains a lot of cannabis. So this is also part of what happened. The Jewish people, the Israelites, were supposed to use cannabis as part of their temple structure and also as part of the high priests. And eventually it all became wonderfully corrupt or horribly corrupt. You have a question, I can tell. You're leaning forward.
I was just going to say, most of the Jewish people I know love their weed. More than alcohol. Turns to be, Christians tend to go for alcohol, and Jewish people tend to go for weed as their kind of default of choice.
Well, it is my assertion that there was a historical Yeshua, a historical, you know, man that lived in Judea, and that I think that the most radical thing that he did was take the cannabis oil that had been outlawed by King Judah a couple of hundred years before the life of the historical Jesus. King Judah essentially said the temple priests have become too corrupt and too powerful. It's like the theocracy again, and you're not allowed to have this oil. No one's allowed to have this oil. And I feel what Yeshua did was said, everyone's allowed to have this oil. And he used it for himself, and he used it for others in order to create experiences of healing and also transcendence. And there is good scholarly work about tracing the root word cannibalism back into the Torah. And also the Therapeutiae. This is a sect of ascetics that lived in Alexandria, Egypt at the time of, you know, about 2000 years ago, when we presume that Yeshua lived, and that they used all sorts of herbs, including cannabis, in order to heal. So there's a historical precedence that it was in use at that time. And so it's my assertion that that was the most radical thing that this person could do, and that that was too much for the power structure, because it's basically like saying, don't have an intermediary tell you what is truthful and what is God. Have a direct experience, like a psychedelic experience of being God and of experiencing that divinity, straight without intermediaries. So then this whole idea of having that this human being had to be killed, like as a sacrifice, in the same way that the bulls or the oxen, I should rewind. The temple was destroyed. And when the temple was destroyed, the Jewish people recognized that they could not worship their God as their God originally instructed them to in, you know, the ancient Bible, in the Torah. So they had to figure out a different way to worship. And what they decided was, we're going to worship our God by reading, you know, words in a book, like hymns or in a scripture, except the book isn't a book with pages. It is a scroll that is the Torah scroll. And the Torah scroll has to be written on parchment. It can't just be written on papyrus or something that's a plant. It has to be written on animal skins from a kosher animal. So this is the idea that they went from sacrificing at the temple to, you know, every religious portable holy book is an animal sacrifice. Like in order to carry around this scroll, an animal had to die. And there are also vestigial traces of that in the ram's horn blowing the shofar on the first of the year, Rosh Hashanah, and other like the Paschal lamb. How do you celebrate Passover Seder? You must have the shank bone and, you know, eat the Paschal lamb. That these are aspects of animal sacrifice that are vestigial in the religion. And even, I don't know if there's a way to be an ethical vegan and attend a synagogue, because every synagogue has at its center an allegory to the temple at Jerusalem that got destroyed, that houses the Torah that is on an animal skin. So all of the energy of the prayers of the people in that room are all being focused on that dead animal's life. And this is the whole, like, that is death cult stuff. That is not a celebration of life. That is, and that's like saying, we are celebrating this type of music. I'm going to make horrible music now. That is like, we love that music of death. That's not what you're supposed to be celebrating. You're supposed to be celebrating harmonic, perfect notes that fit together. So why do we celebrate death and destruction? So I find Christianity to be the penultimate, let's celebrate death and destruction. The idea of taking your best leader and then human sacrificing them in order to somehow bring immortality to their followers. So my understanding is that there was an AI overlay that came into a human being, said, now you are not just a regular person. Now you're actually a special person. And you're going to give all of these other people the new program. And the new program has to do with heaven and hell. Like, where do you go in your afterlife? That's the whole point of why I consider this to be not a positive development. And also, like, I'm going to tell you, I wear a cross because when I came in my experience of walking in, I had a wonderful experience of true Christ consciousness. And it's hard. I know that that's a new age term. I started talking with a new group of people. They were like, watch out. Some people talk about Christ consciousness and it's kind of like, in a distasteful way. I'd like to disassociate myself from anyone that's speaking about this in a distasteful way. And I've often tried to say, I wish that we could have a neutral word for it, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 consciousness, because then it's not associated with a particular religion.
Actually, there is.
Okay.
It is. I would call it a 1, 2, 3 consciousness because, I talk about the 7 rays. Now you talk about the rainbow. And so the 7, you know, there's always a correspondence and basically, it's the red, the blue, and the green, the RGB. That is the Christ consciousness. You have the red, or, you know, representing the first ray, or pure white light of truth. You have the blue, the indigo, the heart ray, the love ray. And then you have the green, the intelligence ray. So that brings the three together. So, yes, you could say that Christ consciousness is basically 1, 2, 3. You're absolutely spot on, even though you were just kind of picking up on a little joke there. But, you know, to be honest, you're right.
And this abstract 1, 2, 3 consciousness that lives on all of our foreheads, it creates a mosaic or a composite viewpoint that it's like a larger entity and each one of us is a little retina cell of this larger eye, or like a bee has a composite eye. And they see different facets of reality and then their processing system puts together all the facets and turns it into one viewpoint. And I really feel that is what we are supposed to be experiencing. And I said earlier in this broadcast, on this planet, at the level of, you know, 1, 2, 3 consciousness, at the level of our brow chakra, there is like an infection. And I see that infection as being part of this Christian religion, that it is a software virus. Like you've got, there are these untruths. Yeah.
So here's my take on this. Okay, you know you've got in modern cars, they have a brake servo system, which is semi-intelligent, so that if you put your foot on the brake, it doesn't lock the wheels and you don't skid and die. So there's these, you know, ABS brakes and things like that. And it's a little microprocessor. And it's as if somebody's taken that and decided to put a website on it. That it's using the natural consciousness or the natural faculty of the physical human brain, throwing an inappropriate piece of software in it, an inappropriate app, that generates reality, according to a pattern that is not natural, according to, as you're saying, the Jehovah pattern. Is that right? Now.
Absolutely, absolutely spot on.
So here's the thing. All right. So. Jehovah, it's like Obama giving everybody a mobile phone. Jehovah gives everybody a mobile phone that has just the one station on it, but it's great reception. And, basically, how do we hack that? Does it need to be removed or does it need to be simply unlocked? Like you buy a mobile phone that is also locked to the network.
Awesome question. How do awesome we question.
She picks up in her hands. It is. I know the answer. I can feel it coming. Go on.
It is the flying rainbow lasagna. So yes, the answer, how do you jailbreak your own inner eye and higher consciousness? It's flying rainbow lasagna. So this is, I'm holding up a little sculpture. You can check it out. There's, I don't know, maybe if, is it okay for me to give a little shout out to my website? And that's a good question.
Yeah, sure. I'm also going to post a picture of you holding this.
Even better. Perfect.
I've just hit a screenshot. So I'll do that and I'll post the picture in the chat room in a second. But here's the thing. Jailbreaking. See, it's the same concept. It's you've used exactly the right thing. Jailbreaking your consciousness,
right.
Come out of Jehovah consciousness. That's a fabulous topic. Please go ahead, Aura.
Absolutely. So this flying rainbow lasagna shape that I have invented and created, it is the higher dimensional shape of the torus. And I know this is a little bit challenging to do on the radio because I'm going to paint a picture with the words of my voice. But if you could imagine a flat plane, like a piece of paper, and a little ant that has to walk along the flat plane, and it is, of course, limited in its what it can do, where it can travel on the flat plane. But if you fold the piece of paper, that then the little ant, is like if the two edges of the paper touch, the ant does not have to walk across the entire surface of the paper to get to the other edge. So let's say that you as consciousness wish to raise your energy from point A to point B, but there's a big fat blockage in between those two places. And the blockage is called religious programming and genetic degradation. You can fold the fabric of time, space, and consciousness so that point A and point B meet at you and you can bypass all of those blockages. I know it's a hard concept for me to say with words. I really am so visually oriented. It's a challenge to describe these concepts on the radio. It is a new format for consciousness. And it is basically like saying, flying rainbow lasagna is like a pencil with an eraser that you can use in order to rearrange your genetic structure. So it, through superposition, what I'm doing when I create the flying rainbow lasagna,
cool, there we go. That's what happens when you try to upload media.
Emanating.
Sorry, I lost you for a second there.
Not at all. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I think we're back in real time. So, hang on a second. We've just got to reconnect the server here. Okay, yeah, now we're back. Sorry, I was just uploading the screenshot that I made of you and I got such bad bandwidth today. I'm having a bad bandwidth day, you know. Sorry. people have a bad hair day. I've got a bad hair lifetime, so here's a bad bandwidth day. So anyway, please, the Flying Rainbow Lasagna is your ticket out.
That's exactly right. This is how you can jailbreak your genes, jailbreak your DNA. So ordinarily we have our DNA is coiled into this structure that is called supercoiling. And at some of the levels of supercoiling, we have a donut shape or this torus shape. The torus shape is also emanated outwards in our energy field that surrounds our body. And it's analogous to Earth's magnetosphere. And we can transform the functioning of our DNA. So that's another thing. I talk about this all the time. Your DNA is not a static object, as it might have been portrayed in high school science class. It's not just an X-shaped or a Y-shaped chromosome. When your DNA is in the nucleus of your cells, for most, the greater part of its lifespan, it is totally unfurled, like a sweater that has been, all the loops of the crochet has been pulled out of the sweater, and it's chromatin. It's a big, giant, long, vibrating string of your DNA. And it has to be unfurled like that so that the little RNA messengers can read it. And when it is unfurled, it's not just sitting there. It's dancing, it's twisting, it's morphing, it's doing loop-de-loops. It crochets itself, uncrochets itself, and it does that with these little enzymatic snippers because once you start to coil something up, it gets all sorts of potential energy, and then it's stuck. And how do you get it unstuck? You have to snip it. And so I'm trying to give you the idea of a very dynamic system, that science is not sophisticated enough to create little tiny cameras that look at your DNA while it's actually dancing. So it's not really on the level of understanding this yet, but that it is possible to use new dance movements in order to create new combinations of letters or blueprints in your DNA. And that your DNA is not merely the descriptor of proteins, the building blocks of what makes your physical body. What color are your eyes or what shape are your nose or something like that? Your DNA is the integument that ties together your experience of moment to moment in reality of flowing through time at the Planck length. So just in the same way, there was the old-fashioned zoetrope, means wheel of life. It's like a cylinder, like a barrel that has slits cut in the side. It's old-fashioned animation. The old-fashioned people would put a series of stick figures, you know, on a strip of paper. You put it in the inside of the barrel. You spin the barrel. It's a zoetrope. It makes it look like it's animated. Or like a little flip book that you might have drawn in your math, in the margins of your math book when you were bored in class and then flipped through the little pages. This form of animation is only possible due to a biological phenomenon known persistence of vision. And this means that we're not actually seeing a smooth movement of, integrated reality. When we look around, what we're looking at are little snapshots of reality, little frozen moments of time, and that it is our system of perception, our visual perception and our mind and our brains that work together on a very sophisticated level in order to create an interpretation of movement. This is how we have, film. This is how we have movies in the film world, the old fashioned movies, especially. It's 26 frames flashing in front of your eye per second that makes it appear as if reality is actually real. Well, we are doing that all the time with our DNA. The DNA is constantly spinning and whirling and twirling, just like that zoetrope, wheel of life. And that spinning, whirling and twirling motion is what ties together the static moments of reality, the little snapshots. The little slices of time are tied together with your DNA dance. So dancing with your DNA is not just creating physical structures of your body. It's also creating events and experiences in reality. When the human genome was degraded about 10 or 20,000 years ago by that invasion, what happened was our trajectory through time was impeded. It was no longer possible to dance your way through time the way that we used to. And now it was dancing through time in this very clunky way where you keep on hitting the membrane of death. This is what I'm trying to say. Humans weren't supposed to die. We were not created to die. And that death is this unintended experience where consciousness keeps hitting the membrane, like that old children's game operation where you're trying not to have your little poker hit the person's side. And when you do it, it goes buzz. So everyone keeps hitting the membrane of death as they're trying to do this delicate operation, keep on buzz. And then you have to circulate back to the beginning, much like that brilliant comedic movie Groundhog's Day. That was like recycling within one 24-hour period. But this happens throughout your whole life. You hit the membrane of death and you get reinserted. And then you have to try a different set of iterations, a different set of possible combinations of thoughts and ideas and actions that will lead you to a different timeline. And that is very inefficient, having to go through every single possible combination before you finally hit that one combination that leads you out of this level of reality. That's not the way we were intended to function. So when we jailbreak our DNA with flying rainbow lasagna, that means all of a sudden you can reactivate your higher faculties. And that means you can begin to perceive the time field directly. And if you were able to wake up in the morning and tell, like, if I get in my car and go out for coffee, I'm going to smash into a brick wall and die. You would not choose that life. You wouldn't choose that final denouement. So the idea is that the religions that were created in order to take advantage of the ignorance that was programmed into humanity about death and about what is meant for your consciousness, and then to harvest all humans. This is like the big takeaway, the long con. The idea that was programmed into both Judaism and Christianity of an eschaton, an end of the world, the idea of end of everything. This is just like programming into your personal life trajectory, the idea of an end of your life. Because you weren't programmed when, probably not. Probably your parents did not say to you, one day you'll find the secrets to immortality and your consciousness will just continue on its trajectory endlessly. They probably didn't tell you that. Your parents probably told you, like, you know how your bunny died? You're going to die one day too. And it's part of, like, education. Like, you have to learn about life and death when you're here. That's not necessarily a good thing because it's not what we are intended to do. So all of these religions that talk about how it is necessary to suffer and then eventually to die. And then after you die, you get to go to heaven where you get to finally have fun and be free. That is the long con. What we're supposed to do is live in our bodies connected to the divine realm so that our earthly existence is not uncomfortable or hellish. I would even say when I look around at this world right now, this is a hellish level of existence in terms of a lowered consciousness, the idea that pollution in the food, air, and water and forced vaccines would cause a lowered and diminished level of consciousness that is uncomfortable. And it's not okay to be like, oh, I know everyone else's consciousness is lowered and uncomfortable, but I'm just doing great in my own reality, because you're not just swimming around in your own private kiddie pool. All of our DNA strings are affecting one another. So if I'm playing this note over here, it's actually affecting you. I'm actually not just playing in my own band and no one is hearing me. Other people are hearing all of the notes that we're all in a symphony. The symphony is called life and we are all attempting to work together and play together to make this beautiful music. So clearly, we have not been making beautiful music, and part of it is this degradation of consciousness that says, you know, on the very basic level, we have to kill something else in order to eat, in order to be alive, that is part of this biological construct. But I said, we had a genetic degradation. You got a question.
More than a question. We're at the top of the first hour. So, time, we can take a breath, and take a break, and take a rainbow. I'm gonna play, Bob Marley's Sun is Shining, which,
I love that song.
In the morning, gather the rainbow. And, we'll continue more of this whirling stuff. Oh, by the way, so here's a Frank Jordan technique. We have just absorbed a vast amount of downloaded information here. You take a deep breath in through your nose, everybody. And imagine that there's a kind of net around the inside of your skull, and you can kind of pull that net off the sides of the walls and roll it up all into a tiny ball, and then drop that down your spine and allow it to be absorbed into your body chakras. And that will retain and distribute to the appropriate places in your consciousness all of the information you have just downloaded in the last hour. And here is Bob Marley. Thank you very much.
You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.
Yes, you are. Welcome back. 17th of April now. It's, happy birthday, Mum. out there in the cosmos, wherever you are. It's my mother's birthday, but she died 10 years ago. So, well, we're talking about all that. So, can you remember your PIN, where you were?
Oh, I'm very good. I like to joke that I tend to go off on a total, like on a monologue, going off on all these things. All you have to do is press pause on Aurora and then just return at any moment and press resume. And I also, you know, happily continue on the trajectory.
Perfect. Perfect. So where were we? Resume, yeah. Please.
Well, I wanted to go a little bit more into Christianity, because I know that I did a really good job of offending everyone who's Jewish. And now I want to continue and offend everyone who's Christian, because what ended up happening with the original, you know, experiencer, who was, you know, at the origins of the Christian religion, whoever that original person was, I'm trying to say, like, the character, the story, the narrative fiction of who that person was hijacked after their death. And that this has been turned into an astral figure in much the same way that you can create a golem, like a homunculus. You take an inert being, but if you put enough thought and prayer and energy and creative desire and sexuality into it, you can make that thing alive. So this is the idea that there once was a real teacher on earth. And this is, I'm not giving like hard and fast empirical ideas, because I don't want to dictate to other people their reality, but I want to hold forth this idea. There was an actual historical person who gave these teachings and experienced conflict. That this idea of having an artificial overlay that was this person, human being, telling them that they were a special theocratic religious figure experienced inner conflict, and that when they died, that they have been experiencing the continuation of that inner conflict in their death journey, and that those aspects of personality are fighting amidst themselves in this level of reality that we are presently experiencing. So we can even look at our present last 2,000 years worth of history as being the dreamlike projections, or lucid, maybe not lucid dream, because I don't know if this person is in control, but that the occupants of this dream are all shards of the personality or aspects of the personality of the inceptor of this religion, and that this whole entire level of history has been that person exploring their own inner conflict. And the inner conflict is between true divinity, like that true organic cellular structure that we have as our natural body, and the artificial intelligence overlay that tells us that death is necessary. So in the life of, you know, in the religious teachings, it's presented as Jesus' struggles in his life, like he struggled with the devil and everything like that. But I'm not going into religious literalism, but I'm hoping to give the idea that there actually was a physical human, just like you and I, that was oppressed by this artificial intelligence, because we are experiencing the same thing in the infection that's at that level of our insight, at that level of our inner eye. Just like there, if there is pollen flying around and it flies up your nose and it makes you sneeze. That's what I'm trying to say, that there is an infection on our planet at the level of Christ consciousness, or as we were joking, the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 consciousness level, that the artificial intelligence has impeded the proper functioning of energy flowing on our planet through those energy centers. So the idea of the kundalini, this is energy that rises up your spine in a spiral, and it goes through all of your energy centers or chakras, and then eventually goes at the top of your head and reconnects you to the divine. In that process of rising up the kundalini, when people are having their inner awakening, when many people get to the level of their brow, but they have not yet gotten to the crown and really connected to what I would say is like the librarian of the cosmos, or the guy that tells you what is valuable information, they get this false infection that says you are Christ, and that is actually truthful. That's an accurate statement. However, it's not the end of the story. And so there are, it's like I said in the previous hour of this particular broadcast, it's like having a lens with astigmatism. It's bumpy glass. We're looking through a distorted lens. So our entire planet has a chakra at that level that is distorted. And when people like you and I raise our energy up to that level, but not completely connected to the divine, the most vulnerable point in personal development, because one begins to associate with the bumps in the glass. One begins to identify with the bumpy surface of the glass and those perturbations and distortions as if they are themselves, and even worship them. It is like if you were colorblind and you put on a set of glasses that allowed you to finally see colors, and you began to worship the colors because it's such a profound experience, and worship the glasses that allowed you to see the colors. But this is really your birthright. We're all supposed to have this eye of time that allows us to see time, probabilities, possibilities, and navigate and co-create in the world in order to do this. So it is a distortion of that level of seeing. And that level of seeing also has to do with understanding salience or significance. Like when we look at a symbol, it is that level of seeing at our inner eye that helps us to read that symbol and determine whether it is significant or not. So it has to do with our interpretation of language, of hieroglyphics, and of anything. If a song comes on the radio, oh, JP's got a question.
The sense of salience. And so what you're talking about here, basically, Aurora, are two inner senses. You know, we have these five outer senses. We have a multiplicity of inner senses, some say as many as 22. And I believe that these inner senses are also connected with the disconnected strands of DNA that we are so, misled about. So do you think you could perhaps even lay a few of them out and say, this is, you know, this sense of that comes from this lineage. Do you have any data on that?
What a wonderful question. I'm so happy to share this. So there are all different types of psychic higher faculties, just like our body has cell specialization. You know, your liver does one thing and your heart does one thing. There are different characteristics and functioning of our inner eye. So one thing that you can do with your inner eye is you can perceive abstractly through time, like to be able to see different possibilities. And let's say you're to sense what is going to happen next. I'll use the example, you could be an athlete or a musician, and you could greatly improve your ability to improvise or play the game that you're trying to do, or a soldier on the battlefield in a war. If you can see 1 second into the future, you can tell where are the bullets going to be. I'm going to avoid those bullets. If you're a basketball player, you can say, I'm going to avoid knocking into that guy, and I'm going to shoot that basket over there. And if you're a musician and you're like, first note, second note, third note, and I'm seeing into the future, I know that's going to be the next note. So that is one level of perception. Another level of perception is the capacity to send and receive. And these are actually separate muscle, like your muscle can relax and your muscle can contract. That's sending and receiving. This would be called telepathy. And telepathy traditionally should be done on only a bridge of pure love. The idea that, oh, I should describe this. The inner eye is like a tendril that reaches outward. I envision it almost like an elephant's trunk, this flexible, sensitive tendril. And it is your attention. It comes from Greek attenuos, to reach out. You can use that tendril of your attention to reach out to another mind, to another person. If JP and I were not here on a radio and on the Skype, I could sit quietly in meditation. I could reach out the tendril of my mind and I could touch his mind. And some people are very good at reaching out or sending out broadcasts. Some people are very receptive and they're very, like having very sensitive hearing. They can hear every single note, even a tiny whisper. They can hear everything that's being said. And of course, all of this should be done on a bridge of love. Because let's say if JP isn't interested in having me touch his mind, that's how it should be. If he's like, no, thank you. It's not a good time. Or I don't like you. Or I don't like being touched in that way. These are healthy mental boundaries. But let's say I'm just a big asshole and I'm like, I'm going to touch you anyway. This is called mind rape. This is not okay. And this is going on the surface of our planet because I'm doing a little bit of jumping around. There is technological augmentation of the inner faculties being used right now. And it's not terrestrial technology. It is exotic. Non-terrestrial technology. It is not technology that runs off of electrons flowing in a wire. It is like a type of genetic amplification of certain inner faculties that makes it so that some people who aren't loving can still be telepathic and they can listen to what's in your mind and they can speak into your mind in a very unkind way. So this synthetic telepathy has been going on for a long amount of time and it's been, they're targeted individuals. JP's got something to say.
Yeah, people will be familiar with Solaris Blue Raven, who has been a subject of tests of that particular technology, voice to skull, real time, someone talking, someone hearing. Yeah.
That's the term, voice to skull. And so all of this arises from these the same people that are, the civilization that worships the AI. Those beings feel that the higher faculties, your inner eye, that that's not your birthright, that that's something like, how you, I don't know if your mom or dad ever said, driving is not a right, it's a privilege, that they look at using your inner faculties as a privilege, that if you're born with this natural innate propensity, they will attack you until you're blind, that this happens all the time to people. And that if you are, the way that you get one of these technological overlays, I joke about them as being implants, like breast implants, they're fake boobs. And I mean to speak about them, not to harm women that have plastic surgery, but to speak about these mind implants as being not desirable, like way better for you to have natural endowments. I know in this world it's a little bit hard to talk about because so many women have breast implants, but there was once a time when it was considered that having natural breasts was more desirable than having something that was technologically manufactured. And this is the idea that I put forth for telepathy, that it is way more desirable to cultivate your own natural higher faculties. And you do that by getting enough love in like your energetic gas tank to make this go. You have to become good at meditating and be good at mindfulness and be good at collecting that unconditional love into your energy banks so that you can then use it by sending it through your inner eye or emitting that attention, that sending out that attention to touch on whatever you want. With your attention, you can touch on another person. You can touch on a concept and it is non-local. You can touch on anything through time. So if you want to learn about a chloroplast, you can send your third eye to touch on a plant and learn about chlorophyll directly from the organism that has it. Or if you want to learn about an ancient Mayan civilization or leader, you can send your tendril back in time in order to touch on that person. And as I said, again, this should be all done through a bridge of love. But in this world right now, there are some people that are very wealthy or well-connected. And so they are given these fake boobs, fake implants. Oh, you are the ones that are now going to be speaking. And this false augmentation, it's like saying the people that are the best singers are not being given the microphone in the concert. The people that are the really good singers that have that perfect pitch and they're singing the right notes and they're playing on the beat, those beings are often punched in the face and silenced and not allowed to participate. And the people that have a horrible voice and are not good, it's just like in pop music these days. There's a lot of analogies that are going on here. Some of the very worst singers are being placed up on a stage as pop musicians. Jay's totally.
So here's the thing. I used to run a jam session and I took it over because of various other things, but the first jam session I went to, I went to the guy who was running it and he said, it doesn't matter what you play. Doesn't matter what note you play, as long as you play it on the beat. it'll be okay. And, you know, subsequently, I mean, years and years went by, and that was, you know, that was the best advice ever. If you want to play with other people, you tune into the beat. You don't try and step, and it's like kind of reiterating what you were saying earlier. But essentially, if you want to improvise with people and you can't, you know, you don't know about music, but you play on the beat. You also, you know, you're entrained to the beat, the heartbeat. You find whatever harmony you can. So if you come in with the rhythm and you come in with harmony, and then you can join the great symphony, as you're talking about. And you were saying, you know, that we are like playing a symphony. I say less a symphony, more like a huge improvised jazz piece.
Yeah.
your pictures behind that is very Bach-like. You know, there's lots of, it's very intricate with repeated patterns that take you deeply into the fractal of things. So yes, so please continue.
I'm very inspired by Bach. I love that music. And I also love John Coltrane, which I feel is the same level of mathematical perfection in the world of harmonic sound waves. And so let's say this, let's say if we were in the musical symphony of life, people like Bach and John Coltrane, those are the people that should be in front of the microphone. Those are the good players, all right? But what we've really got are those people are in our present level of reality being suppressed. They are being targeted. They are being, you know, harmed with energy weapons. They're being impoverished and not being given access to resources. And the people that have the very worst vocal capacities and musical abilities are being given the technological augmentation. And these are the people that work for whatever you would call them, the cabal or the dark magicians. Let me talk about dark magic and satanic technology. When I say the word satanic, I am not referring to biblical literalism. I'm actually referring to a particular space race, a group of non-terrestrial entities. And these are like the beings that emanated themselves not on a bridge of love, but into a technological container. And they're part of that realm of AI. And they have their whole agenda, and they've been active on the surface of our planet for about 10 or 20,000 years. And the antidote, the template for healing that we are developing right now is going to be taken from our little petri dish and turned, manufactured into larger antibiotics and then sent off to all the other places that have this infection, because this is the infection of the level of insight, and it is taking over the music that we're making. So there are people that are on the surface of the planet right now, and they have technological augmentation. They're like, I'm the loudest singer. I'm going to make horrible music now. They're like, wah, 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 and they think, I'm doing great. I'm really doing the right thing. Those are the people that are like, I'm a billionaire, and I'm going to strip mine. I'm going to coal mine that mountain down until it's nothing, and then I'm going to poison this river. Like, clearly, you and I know that that is not according to the symphony of life, and that's not a directive from the source or from the great composer telling us to do that. So these are people playing horrible notes that do not foster life. That is the idea, that life is not just some random thing that arises through no effort. Just like music is not some random thing that arises through no effort. It's the effort of the musicians and all of the organisms that are being alive. And in order for you to be alive, you have to integrate with the microbial realm, the microbes that digest your food in your tummy. You can't be like, oh, I hate you microbes, I don't want to work with you. You have to work with them. You have to work with the plants and the animals and the entire planet. So right now, the loudest mental broadcasters are not necessarily the best musicians. But I'll also tell you that if you are attacked by voice-to-skull synthetic telepathy, what you can do is create a feedback loop between the attacker's biological capacity to hear and listen, and they're non-biological, they're techno implants. And just like you can create feedback, you know, with a microphone and an electric guitar and an amplifier, and it becomes piercing and eventually will blow out the speaker, if you make the feedback loud enough, it blows out the implants. And I give this to you as another technique in the battle, because it's against boundaries that someone else who's not loving, who doesn't have permission to enter your mind, uses a form of technology to enter your mind. So yeah, be a badass, fight against it. It's totally not okay. Because one of the things that your inner higher faculties can do, you can reach into someone else's mind. You can do it for the purposes of healing, or you can do it for the purposes of harming someone else. So really loving beings have the capacity to reach into your mind and like create a whole dream structure, not just rearrange the neurons or the cells of your body, but give you a feeling, give you an experience, like send you to a place, take you on a journey that is healing. And malevolent beings can do the same thing. They can go into your brain, they can redact your brain and make you think that you're sitting in a chair being tortured, or, you know, having your limbs chopped off or your teeth pulled out or something like that. Like these, so that now you can understand these are the same basic qualities that are being applied by people who are either loving or unloving. And so that we're supposed to use these inner higher faculties to feed one another. Like that's another thing. You can use your tendril of your awareness literally to feed another person. So, and my best understanding of how he would do this, because I eat sunlight. I connect my tendril of my inner eye to the sun and the stellar network, and I get direct energy from the sun. And when I do that a couple of times, it's been very vivid. I felt like I was tasting coconut. I felt like I had an actual coconut pudding in my mouth. It was really coming into me. So my understanding is that when we really are athletes of the mind, we really have these higher faculties functioning, and we ingest pure light, it's not just an abstract experience, that we actually can have the sensory experience of eating fried chicken or coconut pudding or whatever is your favorite, and that we can even broadcast those experiences to one another. I can envision a near future where we are all telepathic and where I'm a chef of my mind and I mentally create fried chicken and I broadcast it into your mind and you eat it and you get nourishment from doing that.
And very tasty it is too. Are you frying that on a griddle?
No, actually, I have a friend who is such a wonderful foodie, and he made this wonderful fried chicken at his Christmas party one year. And as I was eating it, and I don't usually eat fried food that's, you know, like not healthy like that, I said, I'm eating this and I'm adding it to my memory banks so that I can broadcast it to others when we have this telepathic society.
That's great. That's great. Cause, it is a delicious, particularly delicious flavor, the flavor of roast chicken. Yeah. So, wow. Okay. So everybody, nice. Get that net and roll it all up in the ball. All the thoughts that we've just downloaded, roll it and drop it down the spine. So, deconstructing the Judeo-Christian. It's lovely to get a bit of perspective in this to see, like, the history of it, and the idea that, you know, we have been Stockholm syndromed into, if you could use that as a word, Stockholm syndromed into worshipping those who are mind raping us and giving us their energies, forcing us to give them our energies. The question is, how do you use the flying rainbow lasagna method to, is it like, you see, because whenever I think of the FRL, and I, you know, I look at it and I spin it, I just do it. It's not a counter-rotational spin. It's just spinning. It's like, as it's spinning around, it's like a fan and it's blowing air into what were compressed flat layers into, like an inflatable thing where there's like, there are more layers that are blowing, or like a puff pastry or something like that. So is there something going on there? Is that membranes? Are those interstices and things that it's kind of bringing energy into?
That the puff pastry analogy is a wonderful description, because what I'm really doing is making something
gluten-free, of course.
Of course, very healthy with no sugar. We're making something have more space inside of it. So I know this is hard because we're on the radio, but JP can see my sculptures and I have my ordinary torus shape that I'm holding up, and I also have my flying rainbow lasagna shape that I'm holding up. And when I make this flying rainbow lasagna shape, the inner place, the interior of the sculpture actually counts as another dimension. And the two pointy ends, if you're looking at a picture of the flying rainbow lasagna, those two pointy violet ends are an oscillation of energy, like from back and forth. So the flying rainbow lasagna, we're looking at the end result of a motion, just like if I took a long exposure photograph of my arm swinging a tennis racket, it would look like I had 10,000 arms, but you understand, long exposure, one arm over time. So when you're looking at the flying rainbow lasagna, you're looking at a long exposure over time of one particle that's jumping back and forth and making these eight, we call them half vortex shapes. So the Flying Rainbow Lasagna is a verb, not just an intellectual concept. And the way that you do it on a genetic level and, you know, on your macroscopic level is envisioning the singularity that is inside of you, or that convergence point of all timelines that is inside of you, jumping to be outside of you. And it could be, I'd do it with the sun, but it could be with another person. It could be with a concept. It could be with a particle. But the idea is that this is that initial leap, like the zeroth dimension leaping into the first dimension. What is the energy or the momentum that makes that leap of consciousness happen? It's a miracle. That's what I'm just telling you. All you do is you sit down and perform a miracle. You leap your consciousness outside of yourself, and then you leap it back into yourself. And the best way to do this is to understand that the singularity is the singularity. There are not many different singularities. So there is a singularity that's inside of each one of us, each one of our energy centers. Every single molecule has a singularity at its core, and every single atom has a singularity at its core, and every single one of your physical cells of your body in your nucleus, your nuclei, all have a singularity or a doorway to infinity. Infinity is the room. There's only one infinity, but there are many doorways to get there. So if you begin to really embody the truth of this, the singularity that is inside of you is exactly the same as the singularity that is inside of the sun, or inside of a far distant star, or inside of another person, or inside of another planet. And you begin to jump that singularity back and forth between you. And I do it on a beat of 8, and I like to put on good music, because to me it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I'm jumping the singularity back and forth between you and me, 5, 6, 7, 8. And this is why I also use that analogy of music and harmonics, because this is a collaborative musical, a song that you're doing with your genes and with your timelines with another being. It is a combining of energy. It is lovemaking. It is an intimate activity that you are doing when you do this. So when procreative lovemaking is happening, genetic tendrils are swirling together, energetic tendrils are swirling together, and emotional and intellectual tendrils of the two partners are swirling together. So too is it with the lasagna, when you do the lasagna as a dance. What you are and what your partner or what you're projecting with are combining together. So when I do the Flying Rainbow Lasagna with the sun, I am getting energy and ideas and structure and inspiration from the sun, and I'm giving the sun some of my music, some of my rainbow approach to life and the personality characteristics that are part of Aurora. And we can fly in Rainbow Lasagna together with each other. I'm also going to say this. I got a whole, like a way of drawing these as pictures, that you fly in Rainbow Lasagna with your DNA by splitting away, you know, the two strings of your DNA when it's not supercoiled, like unzipping a zipper. That when you unzip the DNA, that is a normal part of its process of replication. And what the RNA messengers do is they send one of those sides of the zipper through this thing that looks like a ticker tape, you know, like an old fashioned ticker tape, and it makes it spin around. And when it's spinning around, anytime you have this opportunity, this loop, like a hoop shape, and it's spinning around, you have an opportunity to make it into a Flying Rainbow Lasagna movement. And when you do that, you can rearrange the letters of the DNA. And I like to say, when you do this effectively, it's like you can take any random book, phone book, and you could rearrange the phone book into being a masterpiece. So doing this genetic oscillation, even without a partner, just moving your own genes in a new pattern, allows them to be crocheted into a new format where, because science doesn't necessarily understand, the genes are written. What word is next to another word? Like, this matters in terms of the grammar of life. That science right now explores DNA by unfurling the entire sweater and looking at the letters and words, not in their relationship to one another, but it really matters. Like in a painting, if I have purple next to pink, or if I have purple next to orange, the purple looks differently dependent upon what it's next to. So this is the tiny little bits of your genes do not act the same way when they're not alive, and when they're not in their situation, when they're not in their context of what they're vibrating against. You can really, yeah. You got a question.
Well, it's just that I was just going to say, it's like trying to investigate what is a bug if you're just look, all you can see is the smear that your foot has just made of it. You know, you can't really say, that's
That is exactly how science investigates DNA. It takes DNA like a sweater and unfurls the entire sweater and chops it up into bits and puts it in a blender and then chemically analyzes. how much green, how much red, how much white is in the sweater, but it doesn't actually say what the sweater looked like. Oh, it looked like a snowflake with a Christmas tree, and, you know, it had a whole picture into it. So this is the whole idea. Junk DNA is not junk DNA. It is DNA that science hasn't, it's not sophisticated enough to look at DNA when it is actually behaving, when it's actually dancing. And so here's another thing. Just like vibrating strings of a guitar can vibrate sympathetically, if I pluck one string that is not, and I don't pluck any of the other strings, the other strings are being affected by the vibrations. So in, and this gets down to interdimensional ethics. Science is not prepared to deal with any of this. What you're doing with your own individual DNA in your body is affecting me. And so this is like, what are we going to do now in the symphony? If you're playing music that sounds like this, then that is affecting me, and that is not okay. So we're experiencing right now on the surface of our planet and in this galaxy a power struggle of who is allowed to dance, how are you allowed to dance, and how are you affecting other people? Because the if you're really a genius and you set up a system, there's a way for everyone to be happy. Like, you know, you've got radioactive spiders that eat sulfur and live at the bottom of a, you know, lava vent, and they're happy down there. And then you have birds that fly through the sky and they're happy where they are. But you cannot have everybody living in the same place doing the same dance and with their dances all overlapping one another. So this is the question of what do we do with those occupiers of the interstices? What do we do with the beings that cannot eat love? Why did they create this whole harvesting program? So the idea is they created just like they it programmed you to say, you're not going to ascend. You're actually going to die. Your personal eschaton. They programmed human society to say there is an end of the world. One day you're going to have the end of the world, like Ragnarok or Armageddon or the apocalypse, or whatever. Even though apocalypse comes from Greek, apokalypsos, meaning to open the lid. But you understand that there is this idea of a programmed final denouement. And that's a very artificial idea, because there, why do we say that there has to be an end of the world or a final end date? And it is my assertion that this is the long con, the con game that was programmed in from the inception of humanity. And like JP said so very eloquently, the Stockholm syndrome, the mind rapists who took away humanity's higher faculties, set themselves up as humanity's gods, and then said, oh, and by the way, at the end of the world, where you're going to go and live in heaven. Like you're either or hell, right? That's the idea. Like the Christian book of Revelations, everyone's going to, we're going to have the big judgment day, and you either go to heaven or you go to hell. But those are both like mental programs and constructs that are both inappropriate aberrations. They are particles getting stuck circulating in a little eddy or a whirlpool, as opposed to flowing freely in the cosmos the way they are supposed to flow. So even if you think like going to the biblical literalist Christian heaven is a good thing, because you would like be playing a harp and it would feel nice and you'd be with other quote unquote good people. But what's really happening is your consciousness is stuck. Maybe you're not supposed to keep on thinking like, my name was Mary Smith and I lived on earth and now I'm in heaven and here's my dead dog and I'm hugging my dead dog. Maybe your consciousness is supposed to be in a new format, on a different planet or in a different realm, not still being Mary Smith. And so it's my assertion that this false astral Jesus construct that everyone has been praying to since, you know, around the year 300, the Council of Nicaea, the Roman Church got together and said, this is the official version of Christianity. And that's why like I was saying in the previous hour, I wear a cross because I had an experience of Christ consciousness and I'm connected to that mosaic. But I'm not connected in any way to the dogma of the Christian religion on earth. So I had to learn, I had to make a distinction, and I'm reclaiming the symbol by wearing it. But I say it for people that are new who don't necessarily know me. But the idea is that we do not have to die in order to have a heavenly experience. That what we are supposed to have is continuity of consciousness. So just like a lucid dreamer that has developed their mental muscles to the point where they can maintain their daily waking consciousness while they descend through the layers of, you know, the mind to go into dreaming and then reascend, like coming back up out of the pool to get another breath of air in the day, and they can remember their whole journey down there. That is what our life trajectory is supposed to be like, that we're supposed to be able to go through our various incarnations or being submerged in time. JP, I know you want to break in and say something.
What my guides have called continuity of consciousness. So that your dream is not something that disappears a second ago and then you're back into the real world, that, you know, that you can remember your dream and you can then, express it in terms. So what's very interesting, is, you know, the idea of, Well, it, again, coming back to what you were describing, what the DNA is the DNA is the encoding of what a higher dimensional being is into the third dimension, like a zip file that contains much more information than just a photograph. There's like videos and audios and documents and instructions and all sorts of things that are included in the DNA just in case we need them. It's like packed in, you know, packed for a very long holiday.
I adore your analogy. That is so perfect. And yes, we have outfits for every occasion. And the outfits, these are concepts or behaviors or things that you can do. So an example of like, what's a genetic outfit? A long, long time ago, before primates were even primates, they had to get a little genetic outfit that's called how to make a placenta in order to have successful live birth. And the way they got this little genetic outfit was from a virus. Virus, you know, viruses come inside of your genome and they hijack your nucleus and then you kick them out. But sometimes they leave behind their ideas. And what this one virus did in the mammalian line left behind the idea of how do you attach a fetus successfully in the placenta. And the amazing thing is that this transfer of genes had to happen in mice separately from in primates, in rabbits separately from in primates, that this happened a long, long time ago. I'm just using it as an example of where do we get our genetic outfits from, and what is the significance of having it? And like a genetic outfit is a tendency, like the tendency to attach tissues together so that they can communicate and share proteins or something like that. So I'm trying to say that we can take these tendencies, like a tendency to knit things together and apply it in a new context. And that's the idea that we came here with these genetic tendencies, and this might not be the circumstance for them. Like if you aren't pregnant, you don't have to know how to build a placenta. But when you get pregnant, then that's a really important aspect of self to be able to explore.
So that's fascinating. Interesting. This is the second time today we've mentioned placenta.
Really?
well, here's an interesting, you may know about this, is the straw man, what people talk about the straw man, the name in uppercase,
right,
is actually, that's what they name the placenta as you're born. So you're smiling. Tell us a bit about what you know about that.
You got it. That's so beautiful to bring up because when humans are born right now, this is the whole idea of they create your avatar of who's going to be uploaded, you know, like into the astral realm. And this is the whole idea that during your life, you're cultivating the characteristics and personality that eventually is going to be uploaded into a fake heaven, a virtual reality. And it's not even a continuation of your pure consciousness, because who we are, these narrative fictions, like you're named JP, I'm named Aurora, these are fictions. These aren't our permanent outfits as we travel through life. Like we were talking about continuity of consciousness, and the meditators of the Far East, like the Tibetan Buddhists, they have this term, karmapa, that's a person who's transferred their consciousness from generation to generation, and they can remember it. But they know, like, this is my body that I'm wearing of this life, but this is not who I will be all the time. So the idea of if you're like cobbling together your characteristics during your life. My name is Jane Smith and I live here and I like to eat ice cream and these are all the things. And then at the end of your biological life, you die and your consciousness is harvested. Those are the personality characteristics that this artificial intelligence would like to place in its virtual reality. And I don't know if you've ever seen this show called Rick and Morty. It is a very humorous TV show. I don't watch a lot of TV, but somebody sent me this link and it was freaking brilliant. And it is a mad scientist who runs his car, the alternator inside of his car's tiny universe. You're going to love this.
Yeah. I've seen this episode. It blew my mind. My son introduced me. I've seen a couple of episodes. There's this episode. There's another one where this couple, they go to the best marriage counselors in the universe, the whole planet, the best man, and they blow the planet up because their marriage is so dysfunctional. So please, tell us about Morty's universal power unit, because I saw that and it's just so brilliant.
Yeah, it's really worth watching. I think the episode is called The Ricks Must Be Crazy. I think it's from season 2. And I think you can find these things pretty easily by, you know, doing an internet search or checking out YouTube. And the basic premise is this mad scientist, the alternator in his UFO car stops working. And when he has to investigate why it isn't working, it turns out that the little tiny cosmos, the little universe that he has imprisoned in his alternator, stopped doing their energetic dances that they're supposed to do. So he was running his car on the energetic emissions of this little tiny civilization. And he, you know, divigulates himself, sends himself down into the little tiny world and finds out why they're not all doing their work and emitting their stuff. This is the analogy that I'm bringing up, and the idea of being harvested to a false heaven, a virtual reality where you're not actually free, but where you are free to run on a tiny hamster wheel and power the consciousness experience of a much larger being. And that is not freedom. So I'm not here, as you know, an otherworldly being to cast aspersions upon earthly religions, because I understand the need for comfort. Like I talked about that in the first hour, like the dogs walking across the intersection and being very scared. And it's because humans have been programmed to think like you're a lowly worm and you're pathetic and you're sad and you're inept and you don't know anything. Like none of that is true. You're actually all noble and heroic and quite adept, but you've been programmed to think that you're nothing and that you require this external overlord and that you would oh so happily worship it. And then to go to heaven and work for the Lord, like that's the ultimate pat on the head, that you're a very good person if you get to do that. But I'm saying that that is not really a reward. That is like being trapped in a little battery energy pack that is convenient for a larger entity, but that is not necessarily convenient for you on your trajectory. And that the real creator of this big, beautiful symphony really wants us all and all consciousness to be free, like to be able to flow where we naturally want to go, because you might wish to incarnate in a totally different level of reality or have a different experience, and you should be free to do that. And what we've been doing for many, many millennia on this planet is circulating around and around, bumping into the bumping into the membrane of death, having to circulate back around again, and not having an effective way to exit the system. So in the whole idea of the end of the world, everyone's going to be harvested. We have this opportunity right now to turn that totally on its head. We can take like the whole idea of pole shift, that people are afraid of pole shift because this is like the vestigial trauma, bringing back things that happened at the end of Atlantis, the fall of the antediluvian sophisticated worldwide culture, that so many people are afraid of that happening again. It's just like if you were horribly raped or in a car accident, then you carry the imprint of that trauma and you fear and expect that that will happen again. But we can have the corrective experience. We can have the equal opposite experience. Instead of being genetically degraded and suddenly have our minds crashing down and go from, you know, we used to be able to eat pure sunlight and stay warm with our own magical microclimate, to be suddenly like you have to kill an animal with a flint knife and cook it over a fire and eat it somehow and stay alive. Like that was a precipitous drop instantaneously. Maybe we can have something happen in the opposite direction instantaneously. Maybe we can like a rocket ship, you know, jump upwards very suddenly from our lower levels of consciousness or being relatively disorganized into being very organized. So a lot of people are afraid of pole shift, that it will be like it was in Atlantis, a destruction and a cataclysm, but that's more of that long con, the programmed expectation that you will die and that your planet will die and that this is necessary, like sweeping the etch-a-sketch so you can draw a new picture. But I really see the pole shift not as a north to south or south to north that's going to cause the skin of Earth, you know, to like crustal displacement and all sorts of tsunamis and tornadoes and stuff like that. I do not see that. I see this as a turning inside out. That's what that flying rainbow lasagna shape is all about, that it makes the inside and outside communicative. It renders moot this membrane of separation. Past and future can communicate. Self and context can communicate. All of these things that used to be in dualistic opposition can now communicate and have a seamless integration. Have that people who are alive and people who are not alive, people who are dead, people who are spirit. That whole entire level of separation is ending. And that means that we have a new world where there is no longer a distinction between spirit and matter. And spirit can also be defined as pure consciousness or pure energy or potentiality, like time, you know, potentials, things that can happen, and the actual experience of matter. That we've been living under that level for about 10,000 years, and that is an artificial separation. And this turning inside out means your inside world of thoughts and ideas and emotions and passions become seamlessly integrated with the outside world of hard-edge objects and other people. And I'm seeing evidences of this happening right now. A lot of people are sharing their synchronicities, you know, where you might think something in your mind and then turn on the radio and hear those very words spoken on the radio. Or other one, when I say synchronicity, like it's basically saying you're playing the right note in time. When you experience a synchronicity, it's like I read the music of the musical score. I knew I was supposed to play a C, and then I played a C, and then I heard the music of the con, and I knew that I was integrating well. We're all doing this more and more. And the more the good musicians play their music effectively, we're drowning out the bad musicians. And the bad musicians, they are so bad that they don't even have instruments. A lot of them don't have their own bodies. So they co-opt people that do have bodies. What you need to do is kick them out of your body. You do not allow bad musicians to play sour notes with your own body. And this is, you know, the personal sovereignty. We're all becoming free in our own trajectories of life. And this is not to freak you out, but the interstices are a part of your own genetic code. Those membranes that are inhabited by demons or malevolent beings, they're part of your own genetic code. So when you clean up inside, I said in the previous hour, we need a giant mop and a giant bucket because this is a big mess that we're cleaning up. When you clean up your DNA inside of your own body, you are helping to clean up the giant mess that has been made in our galaxy and, you know, affecting many, many different stars and star systems.
Wow, that's fabulous. And, we're definitely needing that, Herculean effort. It's one of the labors of Hercules, isn't it, to clean up the stable. And,
is it?
Yes, there's this huge stable and the manure, let's say, has built up over years and nobody can approach it because it just stinks so bad. And, so Hercules' job, he very cleverly, of course, Hercules is clever as well as being a Titan. He very cleverly, went upstream of a river, and where the river is very narrow, he managed to redirect the stream. Then it ran down the channel that, went right through the stable, and, then the water, rushed through the stable, fertilized all the fields around it all works out in a beautiful way. And the simple thing he did was to take the river from right up upstream. You know, when the river was easy to manipulate when it's little. So many, many lessons there.
I love simple, awesome solutions like that, like working smart instead of working hard. And here's one that I can share with others. So this is the whole idea. I give you this paradigm that there's beings that can eat love, like you and I. We eat love or food that has love in it. And then there are beings that cannot eat love, and that's why they're stuck on the interstices. And this has also been like their personal excuse for a very long time. Like, don't blame us. It ain't our fault. Pity us because we can't eat love. But not that long ago, I conceived of a new quote unquote software program for the cosmos that is called Reboot to Love. And here's the basic idea. In my MacBook, I can have this program called Bootcamp, where I can partition my hard drive and I can have two different operating systems or OS. I can have on one side Windows and I can have on the other side Mac. And if we say arbitrarily, let's say that we denote Windows as being pure evil and Mac as being good, arbitrary, you know, I'm laughing here, right? Because we know like Windows and Microsoft, that they are totally part of the Borg and infecting your computers and part of the CIA. But, you know, Mac is pretty bad too. But the whole point is arbitrarily denoting Windows as evil. And if we say that the beings that are like the occupiers of the interstices or the demons on the membranes, that is their operating system. And that's why they're constantly being given love, but they cannot make use of it. It is written in a different software language. Those beings now have the capacity to reboot to love. They can partition their hard drive and get the operating system that is love, love OS, and they can reboot into that new perspective. And if they make this choice, first they're like in like a, not a purgatory, like, they're still auditioning. Like, you can't just take someone who's pure evil and be like, I'm flipping the switch and now you're pure good, coming to heaven, because they need to be reacculturated and be given new values and new behaviors in order to fit this new perspective. So once a being reboots to love, and it has to be a choice, like they make this, free will choice that they want to become loving, then they're in an intermediate zone, because they could still go back to running the hateful, you know, Windows operating system if they wanted to switch back. What they need to do is, while they're in that indeterminate state, they've got access to all of their passwords and all of their previous evil networks. And the evil networks, these are like events. When I say evil also, I'm talking about beings that make noise like this instead of music. That's what I'm, they're bad musicians. The bad musicians have their whole bad music projects, and they're like, who are we going to kill? How are we going to distort the time field? All of these different projects over hundreds or thousands or millions of years. This is what I'm talking about, the long con game. And the beings, when they're in the process of rebooting to love, they have access to all of those malevolent intention programs for the time field. They have their passwords. They can go back and they can access those programs, and they can change them. And that is also part of this process of redemption, to be able to be loving again. Because once you reboot to love, you see the evidence of how you have harmed the time field. It's like every single time you caused a wound or an injury to the time field. And if you're loving, you're horrified by those actions and you want to change and fix it. And you're still connected to that network of malevolency. So you have the capacity to go into it and fix it. And then, of course, you know, real redemption is when they erase the evil or hatred operating system from their OS, and they're only running pure OS love. So this is the, like, I come up with these ideas. These are not just fantasies. These are, once you have an idea and a conception, like I have the idea of wheel and axle. That's the idea that anyone can build. So I created this idea of reboot to love, and it's not just proprietary to me. It's now an idea in the world that can actually be practiced by many people. And it is being, I'm happy to say.
Fabulous. And that's a great conclusion to this. As a step up to the operating system of love is, many years ago, I just had the concept, wouldn't it be useful? We've got all these, what sparked it was chain letters and spam letters that say, you know, there's this Microsoft virus coming around and the people at this say this and the IBM people and, you know, and it's just a lie. It's just made to make people feel nervous, which is a fear virus. And I thought, well, they can have fear viruses can play at that game. So I invented the concept of the love virus, that, you know, everything that I say infects people with the love virus, and that that this love virus is the opposite of the fear virus, and it ties things together. And it's a kind of, I suppose it's my own version of the FRL. So Aurora, it's been an incredible pleasure and hyper-dimensional learning exercise this afternoon, very much great levity, great upliftment, and may your puff pastry ever rise.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you for inviting me to share ideas here and to share your wonderful energy. And yes, thank you for the blessing. May we all keep the lasagna flying.
Keep your lasagna flying. There we go. So that's it. Keep the rainbow lasagna flying, and we'll be back with the World Healers Group in a couple of minutes' time. Thank you very much. Beyond.